Dads on the air, we're here cause we care. We ask all the questions that others don't dare. We're dads on the air. We're dads on the air.
And welcome back to Dads on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and we have in the studio today Pete Nichols from Parents Beyond Breakup, but our main guest is Glenn Poole, and we're going to be speaking to Glenn about his new book, How Can You Stop Male Suicide in 7 Simple Steps. Now, Glenn is a well-known men's health advocate. He's the former UK coordinator of International Men's Day and the founder of the organisation Stop Male Suicide. He's the author of numerous books, including his latest book, How You Can Stop Male Suicide in 7 Simple Steps. Glenn, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bill. It's great to be here again.
Glenn, put it simply, male suicide is a big problem, as set out in the key facts section of your book. How big is it? And even in your book, do you think perhaps it's being underreported?
Yeah, so look, globally we reckon at least one man a minute is dying of suicide, which is a really huge figure to try and get our heads around. So if we just focus on Australia, we know that at least 6 men a day are dying by suicide. That's the reported figures. So as you quite rightly say, it's probably underreported by 10, 20 or 30%. And men are killing themselves at about 3 times the rate of women. So it's a real male issue, because for every 1 female suicide, there are 3 male suicides. I think that we've got one thing wrong, particularly with the way that we make sense of suicide. We tend to see suicide as a mental health issue, and then see the problem being that men don't talk about their feelings about their mental health. So you have this conversation that goes, well, the reason that women aren't as likely to take their own lives is because women are more likely to still have. But what the evidence shows is actually men are more likely to die from what some people are calling situational suicide as a response to life events. So depending on which research you look at, between 50 to 80% of male suicides are not predominantly linked with a mental health issue. They're linked with life problems. So things like family separation, which I know is a major issue for you and your listeners, but issues around work, unemployment, money, that kind of stuff, bereavement, there's a whole host of issues that men and boys face, and they seem to, the two that impact men more profoundly than women in general are unemployment, so the inability to provide for your family hits, obviously it affects men and women, but it affects men much more profoundly than it affects women. And then there's a whole issue around family separation and breakdown. We know, you know, there are men and women who will suicide who've been through separation, but separation affects men in a much more profound way than women on average, for all the reasons that you'll have discussed on this program many times before.
And you mentioned the rate at about 3 to 1. Is this why you focus on male suicide in your work?
Yeah, I mean, as you know from talking to me over the years, I'm very committed to working on all men and boys' issues, and have been for about 20 years now. And all my work is united by an attempt to create a world where every man and boy is just one conversation away from whatever help and support they need. Now, if that's something like, I don't know, you've got a health concern, you've got a lump somewhere embarrassing, and you need to have a conversation with someone who can give you advice, that one conversation might be quite helpful. In terms of suicide, that one conversation can literally save a life. So connecting men in distress to people who can provide them the right kind of help and support can literally save lives when it comes to suicide. And because suicide is linked profoundly to most of the men and boys' issues that we are all aware of, things like lower educational status, unemployment, homelessness, work issues, separation issues, all these issues that seem to impact men and boys more profoundly also increase men's risk of suicide. It's like a linchpin that connects us to all men's issues. The problem for me is that it's our inability to tackle men's issues and even just talk about men's issues collectively, which hinders us in our efforts to address suicide.
So this focus on the males, is that, do you think that has an effect on, say, fundraising? Because the community seems very switched on to women's issues, children's issues, but not so much to male issues.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt that there's more focus on the issues that women and girls have than there are the issues that men and boys have. I often say that our way of making sense of gender issues is to frame them as women having problems and men being problems. So the focus on working with men tends to be on fixing the problems that men cause rather than addressing the problems that men have. And that is a big part of the issue. There is actually a very, unlike other issues where often there's not even a lot of money or time being invested in addressing them, there is a huge amount of money being invested in suicide prevention in Australia in particular. But the vast majority of that time, money and resource is invested in solving suicide as a gender neutral problem rather than actually focusing on it as a gendered problem, which predominantly affects men and boys. And that's one of the reasons why we're not very good at preventing it, because most of the effort goes into helping people generically, which is good, wouldn't want to stop that, but the fact that it isn't targeted specifically at men and boys means that we don't reach as many boys as we need to. So whenever you see any kind of analysis of how the money is spent on suicide prevention, how effective it is at reaching men and women, it's always more effective at reaching women. And yet, men are three times more likely to take their own lives. So, yeah, this collective inability to focus on men and boys as a group who have specific needs and specific problems that we need to address is a part of the reason why we're not very good at solving male suicide.
Now, perhaps for the first time in history, men in the 21st century are more likely to die by suicide than, say, an armed conflict. Is the rate of suicide actually getting higher? Are more men committing suicide than in the past? And why would that be?
Interestingly, when you map the suicide rate over, say, the last 100 years, it goes up and down over time. The different periods of time where it seems to go up and different periods of time where it seems to go down. Also, the age profile seems to change as well. At one time, it was younger men who were most likely to suicide. Now it's more likely to be men in their 40s or men over 80. But the suicide rate is actually the same as it was about 100 years ago at the moment, slightly higher in the last year or so, but the numbers are much bigger because we're talking about a much bigger population, and because other causes of death have gone down, relatively it becomes a bigger problem. So there was a time when more people were killed on the roads than people were dying by suicide. We have been very effective at bringing down road deaths. People in Australia in particular will be very aware of the ongoing government efforts to reduce the number of people who are killed on the road, and now half as many people are killed on the road as die by suicide, and yet we're putting twice as much money into road death prevention than we are suicide prevention. So it's not necessarily that it's a much bigger problem than it was, say, 100 years ago or 50 years ago. It's certainly increasing in recent years, but we're becoming more aware of it. It used to be seen as a much more private issue, an issue that there's nothing you can do about it. If someone wants to kill themselves, then there's nothing we can do. But we know it's preventable. And I think we are slowly becoming more concerned about that. We are slowly getting to the place where, because people are more open and talk about stuff more freely, it's very hard to find people who haven't got some experience of suicide in terms of knowing a friend or a neighbour or a relative or someone from their community who's taken their own life. And there is actually a real drive now. What I've found as I've been going around the country, Bill, because we spent the last year travelling around Australia, we've been to every state and territory delivering workshops and seminars on male suicide. And I must say my attitude about a year ago was that I needed to convince people that we had to do something about this. And I got that wrong, because actually as I've met people, what I've discovered is people really want to help, people really want to make a difference, and the big thing is they don't know how. And that's the seed behind this book, How You Can Stop Male Suicide, because it's about giving people some basic skills and tools to feel that they can actually take action and help people in their community.
You just mentioned then the fact that suicide affects so many people, not just the immediate victim. There's a song. We're going to take a short break now, and then this song might be appropriate to that comment. This is called Everybody Hurts by R.E.M.
it's time to sing along. When your day is night, hold on, hold on. If you feel like letting go, hold on. If you think you've had too much of this life,
was Everybody Hurts by REM. And our special guest today is Glenn Poole, the well-known men's health advocate and the author of How You Can Stop Male Suicide in 7 Simple Steps. Glenn, we just talked about the prevalence of suicide, and there seem to be some groups that are particularly prone to this. Certainly the indigenous communities, farmers seem to have a higher level. Can you ascertain what the factors are in these groups having higher than the average level?
Yeah, sure. There's basically 4 key factors that make it more likely for a man to end up on the path to suicide. And in really colloquial language, I say that is work, wife, mood and booze. So work issues, wife, relationship issues. If you're a gay guy, obviously it's not a wife. If you're unmarried, it's not a wife, but it's pointing to relationship issues. Booze is all sorts of harmful behavior, so drinking, but also taking drugs, self-harm, risky behavior, that kind of stuff. And mood is the mental health side, which we're all aware of. So that pattern repeats across all the groups that are at high risk. So we know that the indigenous community are twice as likely to suicide as the non-indigenous community. We know that some rural communities, suicide is twice as high for men as it is in cities. We know any kind of measure of how far you are up or down the social ladder, whether that's your income or your educational level or your housing conditions, also doubles your risk of suicide. But it's not just being an indigenous fella or living in a rural community or being a gay guy which increases your risk. Those other factors at some level need to be present too. So there needs to be some impact on your relationships. So either a relationship breakdown, or you're in an abusive relationship, or your family has broken down, or you don't have you're socially isolated, you don't have close people near to you. So any kind of impact on relationship will make it worse, which is why talking about this and being able to make sure we reach out and connect to people is important. It's why organizations like the Men's Shez Movement for older fellas and organizations like Dads in Distress for Separated Fathers are so important, because they connect men to communities and actually start to address that fact that they feel isolated. And then there's the stuff about work. It's bigger than just work. It's about having a role, having a status, having purpose. And when men lose their role or their status or their purpose, they become at risk. They come at risk. So, you know, again, it's the same with farmers, with indigenous people, with separated dads. If their status is affected, if they feel they have no purpose, if they feel they have no role in their family or their community or in life generally, then they're at greater risk, which is why connecting men to organizations like Men's Shed or Dads in Distress or finding meaningful employment and that kind of stuff is a protective factor against suicide. So you can start to see, as we build up that picture, that it's so much more there's so much more we can do rather than just simply hector and lecture men and tell them that they should be talking about their feelings about their mental health. If you've got a farmer who's approaching retirement, he's got real financial issues, he's sitting on a farm which is a financial drain, he doesn't know how he's going to sell it or pass it on to his kids, he's been impacted by drought, and on top of all that, he's feeling distressed and maybe a bit depressed, telling him that he needs to open up and talk about his feelings and go on medication is not going to change his financial situation. So we know, like, I've got friends over in WA who focus on financial counselling, rural counselling for farmers. They say they haven't lost a guy to suicide in years because they're actually addressing the problems that men are dealing with. And they don't start to say to the blokes, listen, mate, you've got to open up and talk about your feelings more. Stop being such an old-fashioned man. You've got to be more like a woman and talk about your feelings. They go, no, what's your problem, mate? I understand it. How can we help you deal with it? In a male-friendly, manly, supportive way.
Well, I note the title of your book is a very positive one. It says how you can stop male suicide in 7 simple steps. And I know perhaps one of those steps came up in the recent ABC show about you can't ask that on the topic of suicide. And a farmer said that one of his workmates had seen he was in a bit of a bad way, so he actually took the guns away from his house. And when the farmer was actually heading that way, of course, the guns weren't there. So you remove the method, if that's possible, if you're in that situation, I see.
Yeah, reducing access to means is certainly one step, and we've turned the book into a training, and teaching people about that kind of stuff is part of what we do. But there's a step before that, which is actually just having the conversation. So there's 2 key things that we teach people. One is how to spot a man at risk of suicide. You often hear this story that, oh, this guy killed himself and we had no idea whatsoever. Now, the people who tell you that story, if you go back and visit them in 6 or 12 months, you'll often find they'll say, we've learnt more about suicide now and we realise the signs were there, we just weren't aware of them. The signs are nearly always there. So we teach people about the signs. You know, look out for the guy who is having trouble in his relationship, who's suddenly drinking more, who's maybe, he's not himself, he's having trouble at work. Look out for guys in those situations, because that's a red flag that those guys might be at risk. And the second thing we teach people is you can use all these fancy ways of trying to spot someone who's at risk of suicide, but the only way you can find out is to ask. And there's still a massive stigma about that. So I train people how to actually have that conversation with people, and it's amazing how many people are really resistant at first. Oh, I mustn't ask that. It's intrusive. It's what they might be offended, or even people say, oh, I might put the idea in their head. You know, they might actually say, you know, I might say to them, are you thinking of killing yourself, mate? And the guy might say, do you know what? Well, I hadn't been thinking of killing myself, but now you've mentioned it, you've put the idea in my head, I think I'll probably go and do that. It doesn't happen. So all suicide prevention training folks just has one thing in common, which is teaching people just to ask the question. It's kind of the are you okay question, but deeper. It's literally saying, look, you know, it's not uncommon for someone in your situation to be thinking about suicide. Are you thinking about suicide? And the ability to ask that question and be okay with the answer, there's some research on Australian blokes that found there's 3 key factors that would help prevent a man on the pathway to suicide. And that's having someone to speak to. But it's having someone to speak to has these 3 qualities: that they are non-judgmental, that they are open-minded, and that they are trusted and respected. And the way you gain a man's trust and respect is to be open-minded and non-judgmental, and allow him to know that whatever he has to say, it's safe with you. He can say whatever he wants and can tell you whatever he wants, and he can trust you with that information. You won't be shocked, you won't be horrified, you won't try and fix him. You'll just actually take that information, and then you need to refer him to the right kind of help.
And yet every now and then we are really surprised by someone who takes his own life by suicide, and I'm thinking the most recent high profile one of Dan Vickerman, the rugby player. There was a man who seemed to have everything. Is there any way, looking from the outside, that you can try and work out what happened there?
We need to be really wary about individual cases. We don't have all the information. But the one thing that I observed from that particular case, which was like a red light, was the fact that he'd lost his role. He'd lost his role as a professional sportsman. He'd had high status, he'd had purpose, and he'd actually spoken about how he was struggling to make the transition. So there's one red flag straight away. In our simple model of 4 things of work, wife, mood and booze, his work, his role, his status had completely changed. And so we know that transitions for men of all backgrounds can be difficult. Transitioning from being at home with your kids to actually being separated from your kids. Transitioning from being at home with your family to going to university. Transitioning from being in the armed forces to becoming a civilian. It may seem when you look at Dan Vickerman that there's nothing for us to learn from that situation because professional sportsmen are rare. But when you start to unpick the layers and you know a bit about suicide, you can see there's some very common patterns there that we can learn from. And for me, the frustrating thing about that particular story was that it wasn't named as suicide in the media, because there's this whole thing about, no, we mustn't talk about suicide. It was like he's ended his life. No, not he's ended his life. He's died. It was unexpected. There's no suspicious circumstances. And then at the bottom of the story, and if you're affected by the story, please phone the suicide helpline. Mm. We have this very kind of, we're treating adults like children in terms of our ability to have open conversations about that. We could have taken Dan Vickerman's example and had this conversation that we've just had now and talked about how, from Dan Vickerman's experience, we all in Australia could have learned how to look out for other men in our lives who are having a similar problem. Not our friends who are professional sportsmen, because most of us haven't got mates who are professional sportsmen, but our mates who are doing it tough, our mates who are struggling to shift from one situation to another, our mates that's just split up with his wife or partner. He's possibly having exactly the same kind of experience in his own way that Dan Vickerman had, but we were denied the opportunity to have that conversation because we've got this stigma about we mustn't talk about it.
Well, to get a lot of practical information on that, this whole topic, I do recommend Glenn Poole's new book, How You Can Stop Male Suicide in 7 Simple Steps. Glenn, we've reached the part of the program where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you picked and why you picked it?
Yeah, look, so me and Jackie, my partner, have been travelling around Australia for the last 12 months. If I can do a quick plug, we've been delivering seminars, www.stopmalesuicide.com. You can find out about the seminars and trainings that are still going on. And our anthem on the road has been this song. When things are getting a bit tough, when we're a bit bored of travelling another 1,000 kilometres, we whip out this CD and we dance along to it in a safe manner on the road, folks, I'll have you know. But we do dance and drive to this wonderful track. It's called Counting Stars by One Republic.
Lately I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things that we could be. But baby, I've been praying hard, said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars. Like a swinging vine, swing my heart across the line. In my face is flashing signs. Seek it out and ye shall find. Old, but I'm not that old. Young, but I'm not that bold. And I don't think the world is sold. I'm just doing what we're told. Kills me, makes me feel alive. Lately I've been losing sleep, dreaming about the things that we could be. Lately I've been praying hard, said no more counting dollars. I've been praying hard.
the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned. Take that money, watch it burn. Sink in the river, the lessons I learned.
Everything that kills me.
And that was Counting Stars by One Republic. Just like to thank everybody today for being with us. We've got Pete Nichols in the studio. Pete, thank you for being in the chair. I'm sure you agree with all Glenn said on this topic in your work through Parents Beyond Breakup.
Absolutely. I think Glenn's certainly one of the gurus that I look to for guidance and insights into how we can really reach men in a more effective way. And certainly over the last year or two, I've learned a tremendous amount from him. And as an organization, we've learned a lot as well.
And we're going to talk to Pete about Parents Beyond Breakup on another day. If this program has caused any issues for you, you should call Lifeline on 131114, Suicide Callback 1300 659 467, or Kids Helpline on 1-800-55-1800. We'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, and send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dads on the Air.